Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is David Nicholls' Starter for Ten. Written in 2003, Starter for Ten follows the university career of Brian, a young man from Southend in Essex. Clever, hard-working and ambitious, he sees a university education as the route out of a life spent working in factories with only an early death at the end of it. His ideas about university life are unrealistic and impossibly romantic, and his arrival at the unnamed institution, not Oxford or Cambridge but almost, is painful and funny in equal measures. Brian's great ambition is to appear on University Challenge, a programme he used to watch with his late father, and when auditions are announced for the team, he cannot resist trying out.
The first few questions are pretty easy. Basic geometry and some stuff about the Plantagenets. Just there to soften us up, really. But it's hard to concentrate because Alice is making this snuffling noise over my shoulder. I turn and glance at her, and sure enough, she's hunched forwards over her exam paper, red-faced, shaking with suppressed laughter. I go back to the test paper. Question 4. What was ancient Istanbul known as before it was called Constantinople? Easy. Byzantium. Question 5. Helium, neon, argon and xenon make up 4 of the so-called noble gases. What are the other 2? No idea. Krypton and hydrogen, maybe? Krypton and hydrogen. Question 6. What is the precise composition of the aroma emanating from Alice Harbinson, and why is it so delightful? Something expensive, flowery but light. Is it perhaps Chanel No. 5, mixed with a tiny hint of Pears soap, and silk cut, and lager? That's enough now. Concentrate. Question 6. Where is Mrs. Thatcher's parliamentary seat? Easy, I know this one. But there's the noise again. I turn and look and catch her eye this time, and she pulls a face, mouths, sorry, and seals her lips with a little imaginary zip. I smile laconically down one side of my face, as if to say, hey, phew, don't mind me, I'm not taking this seriously either. Then go back to the test. Must concentrate. I pop a tic-tac into my mouth and press my fingers against my forehead. Concentrate. Concentrate. Question 7. The colour of Alice Harbinson's lips might best be described as... I'm not sure. Can't see. Something from that Shakespearean sonnet. Damask hue or coral or something like that. Maybe I'll have another look. No. Don't. Don't look. Just concentrate. Head down. 8, 9 and 10 are fine. But then there's a long stretch of ridiculously hard maths and physics questions, and I start to flounder a little, skip 2 or 3 that I just don't understand, but have a stab at the one about mitochondrion. Psst! Question 15. The energy liberated by the oxidisation of the products of cytoplasmic metabolism is converted into adenosine triphosphate. Psst! She's leaning forward over her desk, eyes wide, trying to pass me something in her clenched fist. I check that Patrick's not looking, and then reach behind me and feel her press the little scrap of paper into my cupped hand. Patrick looks up, and I quickly turn the motion into a stretch, arms up over my head, and when the coast is clear, I unwrap the note.
The novel is set in the 1980s, when far fewer students went to university, and it was still something of an elitist institution. Brian is as out of place there as he is in Southend, and his struggle to fit in and make friends forms a large part of the novel's background. Like many students, he has money problems, and he is racked with longing for Alice, a fellow student. Brian views the University Challenge competition as a form of personal validation. Winning would be a gift to his late father, but also a wonderful way to impress Alice, and his determination to shine in the competition leads to disaster. Told from Brian's point of view, the book gives us a portrait of almost unbearable honesty on occasions. Aware of his own awkwardness and unable to relax and accept his many good points, Brian strives to become something he's not. Someone older, more sophisticated, more experienced, and less working class. As a result, he stumbles horribly through the academic year. When he forgets to be someone different and speaks with his own voice, as he does on his birthday telling Alice about his father's death, a different Brian emerges. Fluent, caring and passionate, he makes a genuine impression on her and on the reader.
Question. What socio-economic term originally described the artisan occupants of walled towns in 11th century France, occupying a position between the peasants and the landlords? Answer. The bourgeoisie. On the train from Southend, I look out the window at the wet, empty streets. A handful of shops open in a half-hearted, take-it-or-leave-it way. The 4 days in between Boxing Day and New Year's Eve are surely the longest and nastiest in the year, a sort of bloated bastard Sunday. August bank holiday's the worst, though. I fully expect to die at about 2:30 in the afternoon on an August bank holiday. Dead of terminal ennui. I change at Shenfield, where lunch is a can of Lucozade, a packet of hula hoops, and a Twix bought from the windswept newsagents. And then there's just time to check how my face is healing in the station toilet's mirror before I'm back on the train. Leaving the suburbs and heading into Suffolk, the rain turns to snow. Snow like this rarely seems to reach Southend. The combination of street lights and estuary air and massed central heating tends to turn it into a sort of cold, damp dandruff. But here, through fields as the sun sets, it looks fantastically thick and clean. I read the first page of Ezra Pound's Cantos 5 times without understanding a word, then give up and look at the landscape. Soulfully. 10 minutes from the station, I pull on my overcoat and scarf and check the reflection in the train window. Collar up or collar down? I'm aiming for a sort of Graham Greene third man look, but getting an Ultravox video. 5 minutes away, and I'm practicing what I'm going to say when I see Alice again. I haven't been this nervous since Jesus in Godspell, when I had to take my top off to be crucified. I can't even seem to smile properly. A lopsided grin with my mouth closed makes me look like a stroke victim, but when I open my mouth, my teeth are jumbled cream and black like a bag of Scrabble tiles. A lifetime of fresh fruit and vegetables means that Alice Harbinson has perfect teeth. I imagine her dentist looking into her mouth and just weeping at the sheer, pure, snowy splendour of it all. As the train pulls into the station, Alice is waiting at the far end of the platform, huddled up against the snow in an expensive-looking black overcoat that almost touches the ground, her head wrapped in a grey woolen scarf, and I wonder where she's put her balalaika. If she doesn't quite break into a run when she sees me, she at least walks a little faster, and as her face comes into focus, I can see she's grinning and then laughing, her skin whiter, her lips redder, and there's something softer and warmer about her away from college, as if she's off duty, and she throws her arms around me, and she says she's missed me, and she's so excited. I'm there, and we're going to have so much fun, and for a moment this feels like perfect happiness, here on a country train station in the snow with Alice, until I see over her shoulder this dark, handsome, moody man, who I assume must be Alice's dad. Heathcliff in a wax jacket. If I'd had a forelock, I'd have tugged it. But instead, I offer him my hand. Recently, I've been experimenting with shaking hands, because it's what I imagine grown men are meant to do. But Mr. Harbinson just looks at me as if I've done something incredibly uncool at 18th century, like curtsying or something. Eventually, he takes the hand, squeezes it just hard enough to show that he could fracture my skull if he chose to, then turns and walks away.
Moving between university and Southend, the story carries Brian through his two worlds, and it is clear that by the end of his first term he doesn't belong in either. The slights and sneers he endures at college follow him home, as his old friends see someone who is changing and moving away from them. Someone they assume is turning into everything they despise. At college, he's seen as the boy from a secondary modern school, a working-class nobody who's trying to push in where he's not wanted. The University Challenge competition becomes the focus of his year and the means by which he justifies his choices to both worlds. The novel is in many ways a modern rite-of-passage story as we see Brian begin to grow up, learning so painfully and slowly from his mistakes. Although less well-known than the later works One Day and Us, Starter for Ten is well worth a read as a portrait of 1980s life and for its funny, sharp and fascinating main character. If it has a weakness, it's in the slightly stereotypical way Nichols portrays his minor characters, especially the women. But in spite of that, this is one of the best portrayals of young adulthood I've read.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334 or visit our website at parkvillecarecentre.com. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Now the borough don't do love letters, but if they did...
Dear you know I love you. And I know you love me. I also know I'm impossible to live with sometimes. I know I let you down. I know I send you home feeling sad sometimes, but I just want you to know that if I didn't have you, I would be nothing. I'd never do anything to hurt you, and I try my best to make you happy every week. Please come back. You know we need each other. Now more than ever. All my love.
Blockhead. The bar. The fastest and most effective way to get a boost wherever and whenever you need it. Whether you're racing to beat a deadline, cross any finishing line, or just looking for an edge, Blockhead is the convenient and reliable option for everyone. Blockhead was developed by Danny Lowe, a 21-year-old sports scientist and multidiscipline athlete, who came up with the idea while in his second year at university. He began developing Blockhead in order to make energy easy for everyone. So performance boosts and cognition enhancement is only a chew away. Blockhead Energy Gum.
Offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualifying nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick. Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 308188 or visit our website rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
Absolutely. Rob Nichols is normally here
but is in that wonderful part of the world between limbo and promotion. And the good news is he actually has read the last book, so he has read Before I Go to Sleep.
Really?
But he felt that he just couldn't get round this particular one, so despite the fact that he was concerned that the spoiler we gave away at the last one was traumatic. You know, so. Rob, we salute you wherever we are. But we do have the fabulous Jordan Boyd. Jordan, undergraduate at the University of Teesside, reading multimedia journalism.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've been wading your way through Starter for Ten because in so many ways you are the Alice Harbenden of the University of Teesside, I think. You know, same sort of, would you say, Jenny, in terms of that?
Yes, but much nicer.
Well, evidently. And who knows, might be portrayed by Alice Eve if another sort of movie version is actually made. But what have you made so far of Starter for Ten?
So far, I think it's an excellent book. The way it's even written is, it's enjoyable and readable. And as Jenny said, it is a perfect image of a life at university. And I can't wait to finish it. Yeah.
Is that still true? Because I went to university back in the 80s. And it was London University, King's College, and all sorts of things like that. And, yeah, there was an awful lot that I could identify with. But this was obviously a pre-social network era, pre-Facebook era, a line where we'd actually sort of... I think it was very exciting because we actually used to have phone cards that we could actually use to put into our sort of phone home and various other bits and pieces. But there were areas there which certainly resonated. Were you still feeling the same kind of recognition of characters as somebody who's basically going to university 30 years after this book was actually written?
Not quite. I think there was a difference with the time era. Mm. I think it was... It's obvious that it was written back then and based on... Was it the 1980s.
I mean, to be fair, it wasn't written there. It was written, I think, probably 1990s or
2003.
Yeah. So it was looking back 20 years there, and right, pay attention to the script. It's clearly the case. You know, when Jenny writes this script, she carves the whole thing open. The opening line is written in 2003. I blame the solar eclipse, Jenny. That's all
absolutely.
I can say.
Absolutely.
But it did resonate. It did connect together from there. Intrigued to actually see the movie, which obviously came out in 2006. It's almost a cast list for the brave new wave of young British actors. You've got Benedict Cumberbatch there.
Yeah.
You've got James McAvoy there. You've got Alice Eve prefiguring her exploitation in Star Trek Into Darkness, where she actually did a bikini shot there for no apparent reason, as J.J. Abrams actually said, where she didn't choose to do it, but she portrays the eponymous Alice Harbenden. Curious enough, Rebecca Hall doesn't do a Scottish version of the other lead character that we actually see there, Rebecca Epstein. And I thought actually probably Rebecca Hall maybe slightly too pretty in terms of the cast, as indeed maybe James McAvoy. I don't know, Jenny, if you've got thoughts or something. I mean, you know, I kind of envisage when we think about Brian that he might have had some serious acne issues.
I think he has. At one point, he scrubs his face and has to stand in front of the mirror for 20 minutes, hoping the bleeding will stop.
Yeah.
He is 19 in the book, and I don't think McElroy was actually greasy enough. He was much too well bulked up. I see Brian as one of those long, thin waifs in a great long trench coat, looking piteously out of the top.
Yeah. Yeah. James Corden, of course, I think did a cracking job as Tone,
yes.
Which is a line from that way. Dominic Cooper, of course, another sort of person. And as far as adults, Lindsay Duncan and Charles Dance as the parents. So I think the kind of, and obviously Nichols did actually write the screenplay as well, so it's nice to see that connected. And let us not forget Bamber Gascoigne, who was portrayed by Mark Gatiss.
Yes.
Which is an interesting line on that side of things. University Challenge is a series. Do you watch it? Because that the kind of... Obviously, Jeremy Paxman hosts it now from that point of view. And it's moved into a different era now, as indeed is Jeremy Paxman now. He's developing a one-man show, a comedy show. I've just seen that he premiered at the Edinburgh Festival last year. Was it a fun read, did you find, Jordan, or did you think it was poignant at times as well? Did you sympathise with the characters, Brian and his associates, or did you sort of think, no, well, what do you expect, really?
No, definitely. I think it's a fun read. And, yeah, I did sympathise with Brian, the way, obviously, before he went to university, his friends and what he was doing before, and then his father and stuff. It was easy to sympathise for him and follow him through his journey, I thought.
couple of people thought it was reminiscent of an older version of The Diary of Adrian Mole, which I don't know. Have you ever come across The Diary of Adrian Mole?
No, I haven't.
No, he's a different generation. I thought it was better than Adrian Mole. I thought that Sue Townsend did a fabulous job with Adrian Mole, but I think this managed to capture the whole sequence a little bit better, really, of the certainly the post-teenage, early adulthood years. And indeed, the sort of leaving home and coping with the death of a parent, which I think was quite interesting. Not that those two are synonymous in any way, shape or form, but it does happen. And I think that was addressed quite nicely. Any particular moving moments, which, you know, again, and you've reached pretty much almost the end of the book, but no spoilers here, you know, alerting to that, so I won't talk about the fight. Oh! or indeed, no. But any particular moments which you thought were particularly well-written or well-structured?
To be honest, so far, I think getting into the book was one of the best bits for me, where introducing Brian, his, obviously when he was going on the pier with his friends, enlightening on his childhood and then how he wants to develop from that, that for me was a great start, yeah.
And of course Brian's mum, who's played again, I thought, eminently well, Catherine Tate, makes perfect sort of line fit from that point of view, young widow, the sort of moment where he goes back home and effectively they're sort of saying, that's it, well, we've already got the room, we're going to have a bed and breakfast for that sort of thing sorted out. A bit harsh, I thought, but never mind. The sort of period at the time, Jenny, very much Thatcher politics in full force. The last, probably one might say, range of students who would benefit from a full grant in certain instances. Obviously, Alice wouldn't because of, you know, obviously the areas within that. And as you said at the start, a period where I think it was the main 10% of young folk actually went off to university and so on. Days which we hearken back after, or do we sort of think, no, actually, you know, that's life. It's much better that they actually have a £9,000 debt these days. Straight off.
I don't think the debt's a good thing. I think widening the opportunity is, but I think the expectation that 50% of young people can cope with higher education is not fair on the country and not fair on young people, because it just doesn't suit a lot of people. Getting rid of the elitist side of university, I think, is a good thing. And I think I sympathised very much with what Brian went through. He was very much an outsider. He was always going to be an outsider, and it's just as well he didn't get to Oxford or Cambridge. He wouldn't have lasted a day.
Yes, his first encounter with his flatmates tend to suggest that he's not going to necessarily be,
yes,
solidly sort of through on that particular basis. But the futon factor. I mean, you know, any two-sided university folk, I mean, obviously you stay at home, so you probably don't check out the sort of living arrangements of the students,
no.
Jordan, but in terms of the futon, let's actually get rid of the thing and put it as a mattress on the floor. It's a bit drastic, really. I think it's a statement, I suppose.
I had a bed made out of railway sleepers when I was at university. I actually built it myself and I got a cheap futon mattress and put it on top and kept it for years. It weighed a ton. I lugged it around with me and I must have been mad. I had backache the whole time.
And that's why Jenny Finch became a legendary writer and indeed ace member of the film movie making industry as well. And of course now co-host of the, or host and presenter of A Book of the Month. Fantastic. So, it's time not just for starter for 10, but marks out of 10. See what I did there? Jenny.
I'd give it 8.5. It's a debut novel and it's a very, very good debut novel, and the portrait of Brian is fascinating and heartbreaking. I love it.
Jordan?
For me, not finishing it, I think I would give it a 6, only because of the spoilers you've given. I think the ending is looking better, and hopefully that'll go up.
Oh, right. Oh,
The spoilers of the fight.
8 out of 10, I think, for me. 8 to 9. Well structured, well put together. So much good stuff coming, because on this particular day, Eclipse Day, I know you might be listening to this live, you might be listening to it as a podcast, but loads of people actually do, so great stuff. But we also got a Young Person's Book of the Month, which indeed is John Green's The Fault in Our Stars, which is going to be co-hosted by Jill Appleton and folk from the Macmillan College later on. You can probably sort of find it on the podcast as well. But the next one, as far as the I hesitate to use the term adult book of the month is concerned, because it carries with it all sorts of things. The standard, the usual sort of eminence that is the wonderful book of the month will be what, Jenny?
I've chosen a gothic horror novel to take us past Easter. And it's The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.